Welcome to Western Veterinary Perspectives. This podcast, produced by the Western Canadian Animal Health Network, is intended to share information about animal health and infectious disease risks with veterinarians and producers in Western Canada. Today I'll be speaking with Dr. Jessica Law to review some simple steps that anyone who's raising backyard livestock can put into place to protect their animals from disease. Dr. Law is a swine veterinarian who works with prairie livestock veterinarians, and she provides care and consultations for many backyard producers in Western Canada. Thanks so much for joining me today, Dr. Law.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So recently, I visited a hobby farm, and honestly, Dr. Law, all I could think of was what a difficult place that it would be to institute any type of disease prevention or biosecurity plan. There were ducks and pigs and cattle and goats all out sharing the same pasture. It looked really quite peaceful, but as a vet, I was so distracted by the disease soup that could be brewing on site. With such a variety of setups on hobby farms and smaller farms or farms where people are just raising a few pigs or a few birds, how do you even begin to think about some kind of herd disease protection plan?
Yeah, super good points. It totally depends on your focus that day, how I feel about the farm. It can definitely be a bit of a scary place for biosecurity. And if the owners haven't had time or the counsel on the biosecurity practices that they should use, then there's definitely opportunities for improvement. If your focus is on containment or prevention of disease spread, then it's a totally different picture than if you walk in there a little bit ignorant because it looks like two totally different places. I think in terms of where I start with a lot of these farms is like the most simple opportunities first. So what are the easiest things that they can do day to day that'll make a massive difference? And that usually begins with just changing boots, talking about who's coming on farm, really simple stuff like that.
And so when you visit a farm, maybe for the first time, what are the main areas or farm zones that you recommend that producers establish? Do you find that it's helpful to map these out even on a small farm?
Yeah, I actually have never mapped them out on a small farm, but for sure. And I think I don't always use the technical terminology because I don't want to bring it to that all the time. I kind of want to keep the commercial technical language separate from what we're doing on their site. But a lot of the time, that's actually a really good way to sort of sum up what we're talking about. And when it comes to those zones, there's like the three major zones. So it's the controlled access zone, the transition access zone, and the restricted access zone. So when you first come to a site, you encounter the controlled access zone first. This is essentially an area that should be limiting anything that's related to your operation in terms of whatever comes into it, like really shouldn't have anything to do with something that's not critical for the operation. So trying to minimize visitors, minimizing traffic that's not supposed to be there. So I'm not going to draw my controlled access zone out to the range road and across the range road because I really want to keep it controlled because I know there's cars that are driving back and forth. So I'll draw that essentially to start at the farm gate. The transition access zone, I usually place this somewhere where we want to have a really true transition. So I'm transitioning from an area where I could come on to that farm in my car into the controlled access zone, but I'm not going to drive my car into the pig pen. So that transition zone is meant to be, okay, so I put on my boot covers and maybe I change into a different pair of boots and I grab a pair of coveralls and then I go into the pen. So just layering those little pieces of Swiss cheese to sort of try to block the holes in biosecurity. The restricted access zone is the true place where these are where the animals are. And really the only things that should be coming in and out of here are the people that take care of them and the feed that they need and any other tools that I need to manage and chore those sites. But obviously there's going to be holes in that Swiss cheese. So we add layers to create a better biosecurity plan, whether that's gloves or different equipment or disinfection, those sort of things to sort of solidify that plan. So essentially the three zones really sort of define what we're trying to do in each zone. So controlled access zone is your site. We're trying to limit the traffic onto your site from anyone that's unnecessary. With transition access zone, this is where we actually make the transition into, we're heading into the pen, what do I need to put on or take off or wash in order to get in there? Restricted access zone, this is really where the animals are, and we're limiting everything coming into here as much as possible.
And I'll just flesh out that Swiss cheese analogy that you made there, because I think some people may not be familiar with that as it applies to biosecurity. But essentially, if you have a piece of Swiss cheese, it contains holes. And if you want to decrease the size of those holes, you can add an additional piece of Swiss cheese on top of that first one, and then maybe a third piece and a fourth piece. And each time you're making a layer, those holes start to overlap. And so those gaps, or those biosecurity gaps, they do become smaller. Is that accurate?
That's a perfect way to describe it. Yeah, thanks.
So while I know every small farm is a truly unique scenario, what are the main points that you find that you're sharing with your clients over and over again to help them to set up some practical biosecurity and to protect their animals from disease?
The thing that I harp over and over again when it comes to the actual animals is trying to limit the number of sources of where they're getting their animals from. So don't go to auction marts. Don't be buying animals off Kijiji or off of Facebook. Like, those are all great places to kind of see what the market's like and maybe get some ideas. But if you can limit your sources of animals to one source, ideally, or a couple that you know the herd health of and that you've done a vet-to-vet with your vet and their vet, that is like the most critical piece. No matter what I do in terms of boot covers or washing my vehicle, like, nothing's going to prevent me from bringing an animal that's sick onto my farm if I'm not checking out that animal's health in advance. And this actually really came to fruition in two cases I've dealt with. So one of them was the site spent thousands of dollars checking out a new source in terms of their herd health because they didn't really have an idea of what was going on. So we did a lot of diagnostics, and I'm not saying that's always necessary, but we really wanted to make sure. But they got impatient and didn't wait for the last bit of the diagnostic, and we brought on a pretty significant pathogen onto the site. And so that herd health, the animals move with the disease. You're rarely moving the disease without the animal or without some sort of biological matter for that disease to live in. And so if there's one thing that I ask any of my clients to do, it's to limit their sources and to check out their sources. The other points, like, once we've gotten past that major hurdle, which it often is just sort of making sure you're limiting who's coming onto the farm. So a lot of the times you're going to have friends who have pigs or friends that have chickens. Just asking them about the health before they come on, it will get to a point where it's no longer awkward and rude. It should be at a point with a lot of your friends or colleagues that are educated in which you can ask that, or you can ask if they've been on another farm recently. And if they have, just asking them to wash their vehicle and change their clothes. Really straightforward practice that's used across the industry and across some of these small holders, because having other people to help you out or to back you up on some things or to check out your animals if you need them to, it's really important. And that collaboration and that community is what a lot of people get into farming for. And we don't want to eliminate that, but we just have to put the things in place to help that. And the other things are just going to be, if they do come to your site, ask them to throw boot covers on before they get out of the truck. So don't touch the boot cover down to the base of your, like, your footwell, put it on as you're getting out of the truck. And then if they're going into the pen wearing gloves and either changing clothes if they're with animals or putting on a pair of coveralls, ideally both if they were with animals. And the most critical one right now that we're constantly talking about in terms of foreign animal diseases is going to be, do not feed meat. So don't feed meat that is truly uncooked. But ideally, don't feed meat, and do not feed feed that's not designated for your animals.
So are you suggesting we might have diseases or specific pathogens that are transported in certain feeds or in certain types of meat products?
Yeah, so there's certain practices in terms of producing, say, like, dog food or cat food that are no longer, like, considered, it's not all conventional anymore. So you may have some raw dog foods, you may have some sort of alternative practices, whether it's like freeze dried. And a lot of the time those practices, if it's raw or freeze dried or cured, they don't get rid of pathogens. So when it comes to providing feed to your animals, you really want to focus on, okay, what could have possibly contaminated this? And for the most part, we have an amazing industry, both food-wise and agriculture-wise in Canada, and we don't have these foreign animal diseases. If we did, we'd know about it. But in the event that something was to be brought in meat from another country that is infected with foreign animal disease, and we just don't quite know it yet, we want to eliminate the possibility that we are going to somehow end up with that meat ending up in our pig or our chicken's body and possibly getting them sick and then getting other animals sick.
Yeah, I'd say it's certainly not worth the risks that could be associated with that for sure. Are there specific recommendations that you make to help protect animals in specific areas of the farm, like the nursery or the pasture?
Yeah, I think this is a really good question because I would have to say a lot of the time these areas kind of jumble together for the most part for most of my sites just because of the size of the site. But the biggest rule that I have across my farms, regardless of the area, is we move youngest to oldest. So we move from the most vulnerable animals to the least vulnerable and through the day. And if you can't do that, then either change boots or boot covers and head into that animal's pen that is vulnerable with some protection or some sort of prevention from moving possibly some diseases that are being shed or bacteria that are just normal in that the older animals, either microbiome in their feces or in their respiratory tract that could possibly put a vulnerable animal at risk. So a really good example of this is when I have farms that have just had piglets. They have little sort of nesting areas or farrowing areas for their sows. And when they go to chore the pigs in the pasture and then they have to go back to those sows with the piglets, they typically will put on boot covers or gloves. Or if they can, they'll change midday and then go back in the afternoon. And this kind of helps move things from moving things around in the farm. For the most part, everybody considers their farm to be sort of healthy in one single health status. But there are sort of what we call opportunistic or just endemic pathogens that are just basically bacteria or viruses that are normally present in those animals that in a normal, healthy, vaccinated, growing pig, it doesn't do anything. That animal is protected. But in the younger, more vulnerable animals that either aren't vaccinated yet or just sort of a little bit immune compromised because they're young or maybe they're sick, they could be more potentially at risk to get even more sick. And other things that I would say in terms of movement that are really important are going to be quarantining your animals. So if you're bringing any animals onto the farm, quarantining them on the site for at least 4 weeks, if not longer. And ideally blood or saliva testing them for pathogens is a good way to prevent bringing any disease into your herd.
So you've mentioned a few times different types of protective equipment, such as boot covers, coveralls. And I know these are all important, not just because they help to keep our normal clothes clean, but also because they're helping to minimize disease introduction or disease transmission from place to place, even on one premise. In a backyard farm scenario or a hobby farm, where do you suggest people keep these clothes and boots to ensure that they actually get used and to ensure that they don't move disease from one group of animals on their farm to another group of animals?
Early on, I mentioned a transition zone, and this transition zone doesn't have to be like anything special. It just has to be somewhere where you're actually moving into those animal enclosures. This could be, honestly, this could be like right at your farm, like your house door. So basically you're leaving your front door and you're heading into the pen. Okay, I'm going to grab my pen boots, or I'm going to grab my coveralls, and grabbing that sort of designated clothing as you head out the door to your animals, and then having an area where you change out of that in your house. I have one site that just comes in the back door instead of the front door, and they just throw it all right in the wash, and their boots are sort of kept clean and sprayed off, and they don't go anywhere else. Or it could be like a shed. So I had another site that was a larger site. It was actually like a more of a commercial operation with quite a few growing pigs. And what they ended up doing was they just turned a tool shed sort of at the entrance of that, what we would call the restricted zone, that just, it sort of happened to work out in terms of the placement where they changed into the boots. Now, some people passed that and went into the trailer, which is not ideal without changing boots. But we would change boots there and head into the pens. So, I mean, the most ideal world would be the trailer or the office would be in the controlled zone, but not past the transition zone and in the restricted zone. And so you would have that gradient. But honestly, it's going to be, I'd rather have it somewhere that's convenient than, like you mentioned, somewhere where it just doesn't get used. And then to prevent it from moving disease from one group of animals to another, really ensuring that those clothes, when they're getting dirty, they're washed. When the coveralls are used, if they're disposable, they're thrown out and put in a trash bag and disposed of properly. Or your boots are disinfected. Like if they're getting dirty, wash them down and disinfect them on a regular basis. So, I mean, a really good example of this is if you have a vet or someone that comes to your farm regularly, just give them designated boots. Yeah, I mean, they're 10, 20 bucks, maybe more now, and it can be really helpful. And it also saves them the hassle of having to go wash or disinfect their boots after they leave your site. So having those available for people is actually something that I really appreciate.
Yeah, I really like the idea of a shed because I feel like giving it a specific space, you know, that also has a visual impact that, you know, this is the spot where this happens could be really helpful. It's pretty common that kids or visitors are interacting with livestock too on smaller farms, whether it's customers who are purchasing some food products or kids and their friends interacting with the animals. And I find it really hard to imagine how you can maintain a truly clean and biosecure farm in these real-world situations. What can we teach our kids or farm visitors to protect them from diseases that they could get from pigs or from other farm animals?
I think it's so important to maintain these interactions for whether it's for education, for people growing up without access to farms, or if it's to just help kids have a solid understanding of what it really takes to get the food to the table. So simple measures for protecting the animals also protect the people. So recently we supplied a student group with over 50 hairnets, disposable coveralls, boot covers, and gloves so that a producer could have them on a farm tour. And that was like a really straightforward opportunity. We actually donated those materials as our vet clinic to the student group in order for them to be able to do that because it is a cost. But for organizations that are doing this, whether it's a like a petting zoo or a tour, one of like the annual farm tours that people like to share their farm experiences at, having the boot covers and the gloves or just keeping them more or less away from the animals are really simple things, but just as things as simple as having disinfectant for your hands or masks to protect the animals from our diseases is sort of straightforward things that we are using in other situations in our lives right now. And I think we can either make it kind of fun and unique so that the kids can use it and not feel so weird about it. I think it's also just really valuable to make it more commonplace.
And this might be the same answer, I guess, but I'm curious if there's any steps that you'd suggest to protect the animals specifically in these scenarios where we know we have, you know, kids running around or people coming on to the farm. Is there anything that could be implemented to help out the animal half of that equation?
Yeah. And I kind of got into it a little bit, but like the gloves and the masks, those are really important. So like if you're ever planning on touching the animals, gloves are a great start. And planning to wear those or at a minimum, wash your hands before and after. And it doesn't have to be disposable gloves. It can be work gloves that are like residing on the farm, not moving between farms, obviously. But if there's questions that people have about like the sustainability and the plastics of biosecurity, there are reusable things that can be used. But for sure, protecting your hands or protecting the animals from your hands at a bare minimum is a really good start. And then if anyone's sick, like ideally they're not going to come to the site, but if they can wear a mask, that's really helpful. It doesn't have to be an N95 or one of those like big masks that we wear in hospitals sometimes, but a simple surgical mask or even cloth mask is useful for those situations to prevent spreading influenza to pigs or respiratory viruses between species.
Many farms also may border or be close to woodlots or wetlands or other wilderness areas. Particularly, I think, in the case of some homesteading type farms. what are the best ways to ensure that livestock on those types of farms are protected against diseases or even predation from wildlife?
This is a great question because honestly, for some of these sites, it's the beauty and the draw for a lot of these people to buy farms in these areas. I know it would be for me if I owned an acreage or a farm. It's really important because it's definitely a day-to-day experience where you're possibly seeing the coyote or maybe you do have wild boar in your area. But having fencing that is ideally doubled, so double fencing, is a really valuable piece. It's expensive, no doubt, but it's an investment and it's something that just saves headaches at the end of the day. Maybe not fencing headaches, but some other headaches in terms of the risks to your animals. So I have a lot of sites that'll have one big perimeter fence and then like electric or high tensile fencing between pens. And this is really helpful. Having a double fence on the outside is like gold standard. You don't need to have the 12-foot high non-traditional livestock fence for like bison or elk, but that'd be really great too. But the super expensive at the end of the day. So do what you can and double up if you possibly can. There's a lot of species that can get through or around these types of fencing. So sinking the fencing into the ground, like the posts and the wood panels into the ground, if you can. I think it's about a foot that's ideal. And this helps with coyotes from keeping them from going under. These are really important just because there's a risk in terms of pathogens, but there's also risk in terms of parasites and predation. Garden animals like dogs or llamas are also helpful. There are minimal risk in terms of disease spread to the livestock, so that's great. But a critical thing is going to be ensuring that they don't move between like sick pens and healthy pens. I had one site where the dog would go everywhere, and that was really tough to try to keep sick animals sort of separate. So training them in that way is really, really valuable to keep them from entering those pens. But that can also be something that is a minimally low risk in terms of like the actual disease spreading side of things to your animals. If you want to get a dog or maybe you want to get a llama, I've never had experience with that, but it's definitely an option.
And are there any specific diseases that wildlife might expose our animals to?
Influenza is probably the most crucial disease that is top of mind right now at the time of this recording with the influenza outbreaks in poultry and specifically high pathogenic avian influenza. But there's definitely a number of parasites that can be spread between the species and things like tuberculosis and brucellosis can also be transmitted depending on where you're at and what species are around in the wildlife.
So let's say that I guess there's a gap or a break in our biosecurity and we've got a disease outbreak on a farm. What steps in that situation can a producer take to ensure that they don't transmit disease from their sick or dead animals to their healthy animals and that they don't spread disease to nearby farms?
So the number one rule that we have at all sites is wear gloves when you're handling dead or sick animals, ideally wearing designated coveralls as well and boots. So if we have like a sick pen or a sick barn, then we're typically changing either boot covers or coveralls when we're going in and out, sort of treating it the same way we would a quarantine pen where we don't want any nose-to-nose contact with our other animals. And then making sure that those coveralls are either washed appropriately or the gloves are disposed of appropriately. And then if you're handling any dead animals, making sure you're doing that with gloves as well and having designated coveralls and boots when you're hauling it or moving it to where you're planning to dispose of it. Self-quarantining, if it's a pretty significant event on your farm, is really valuable. So don't try to get rid of animals quickly. You're just going to cost someone else a really big headache or even their livelihood. And it's just not going to be a simple route out of the problem because this has been known to happen. Getting a vet out, self-quarantining, and just trying to create an area of biocontainment. So don't go to your friend's house that has pigs that night to sort of vent about what you're seeing, but make sure that if there's something significant happening where animals are either multiple animals are sick or multiple animals are dying, then getting the vet out, calling for help. There's resources available for situations like this. So don't feel like you're completely alone without a paddle. It's definitely a situation that happens and there's options for support.
In those situations where we do unfortunately have dead stock, how can we dispose of them safely and in a way that supports the rest of the biosecurity on the farm?
So as I mentioned, wearing specific coveralls that are designated for carrying out livestock. So maybe it's your red coveralls that you wash as soon as they go in the washing machine as soon as you're done. And wearing gloves and ideally designated boots or boots that you wash and disinfect after doing the disposal. And then disposing of them in a way that's in accordance with your local bylaws. So this is going to change everywhere depending on your county. So whether you can bury or you have to burn, that sort of thing. As well as like where you can bury and how close it is to say like an aquifer or the river. It really depends on the layout of your land. So checking with your local bylaw office or county ahead of time to make sure that you're already planning ahead for any dead stock that you may have to remove. The other option is to reach out to a rendering company and either meet them off site or at least outside of that restricted access zone. And ideally your controlled access zone. So you're essentially your farm gate to prevent that truck from coming onto your site because those dead stock trucks do go from farm to farm. So making sure that you are considering that when, if you do end up using a rendering or a dead stock truck to remove the animals.
Oh, and I did want to ask you to elaborate on a couple of components. So the first one might be a bit of a silly question, but if you're doing your chores and you do have some concerns about a disease outbreak on farm, to me, it would, I think, make most sense to move from choring your healthy animals first and then moving to your sick or quarantine pen. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. That's the way to go. And it's a little bit backwards to what I was saying in terms of like the vulnerable animals to the non-vulnerable, because your sick animals are vulnerable. But in this scenario, you want to move from the healthy ones that are vulnerable to the disease to the ones that you're treating at the time.
I know that some diseases can be spread, you know, through fluids, for example, or through manure, and all of those things may get all over our coveralls. And while these can potentially be zoonotic diseases in some cases, some of them can be specific risks for women who might be pregnant. So I was wondering just if you have any comments on how to be extra safe if there's anyone who is pregnant or expecting in the home.
So we typically in like pig practice, we don't have as much of a risk with this as people who raise sheep do. But in terms of just protecting yourself overall, it's really important when handling some of the medications like oxytocin, which is used to induce contractions, or some of the hormones, that you're wearing gloves, as well as when you're handling animals that you're wearing gloves, especially if you're handling animals that are actually farrowing and going through that birthing process, as well as just those coveralls. If you're doing laundry in the home, just using a simple disinfectant or like a bleach when you're washing those coveralls. And then if you really need to, you just, depending on how old your washer is, you can run an empty load or a load that is just with water and bleach before putting, say, towels or other things that are like kitchen towels are being used in the home between those loads, because typically you're not going to have separate washing machines for those two things. And then, yeah, like gloves are just a great way to help yourself, to put gloves on and wash your hands before you're eating or before you're doing anything else in your house is just a really simple sort of rule and habit to get into.
So to sum up, Dr. Law, I'd like you to tell me a few scenarios that really make you cringe. So when you go onto a farm, just things that you hate to see and you know are going to be causing some trouble. And then I'd like you to tell me a few things that always make you smile when you walk onto a farm, whether it's for the first time or whether it's someone, some producer that you've been working with for a while. What are the things that really make you happy when you see that they've been implemented well?
This is kind of fun. And the top two are for the ones that make me cringe are kind of the same thing. So buying animals from auctions or buying animals from multiple sources without a thorough vet to vet or from a completely unknown health source. Those are the two things that scare me the most. And then not quarantining new animals. this can be a real risk to your herd because the animals you're buying, even though you did have a vet to vet and they may be healthy and from a great health source, you don't know how they're going to mix with yours. So having them separate for a few weeks so everybody can settle in and the stress of that trip isn't causing them to sort of shed pathogens that could cause a risk to your pigs or your chickens. Those are really straightforward ways to start out with those new animals that will save you a lot of headaches. And those top three things are my biggest pet peeves, but also the things that make me the cringe the most. On the other side of things, the three best things that people can do are using the appropriate footwear and coveralls to protect their animals. And when they're moving from youngest to oldest and having boot covers or coveralls available when that's not possible. So if they have to go in and take care of those piglets, that they're actually making sure that they're not moving a ton of manure back with them or saliva or whatever it may be from your other pastures. And then being really stringent on who's allowed within your controlled access zone. That's so critical to me, and I love to see it. And my best clients are constantly asking that question to anyone who's coming, whether they're coming to buy meat or buy an animal, or even just look and get an idea of what it's all about. Asking those questions and making sure that they're not bringing in anything that may be risky to their herd. Those are the things that make me smile. It's very nerdy. But it really does make me smile because I know that that little bit of prevention is going to go a really long way.
I think nerdy's okay and it's accepted since we're both veterinarians. I think that kind of is par for the course here. Thanks very much, Dr. Law, for joining me to review some of these disease prevention steps for small farm biosecurity. There's some really practical information here. And for more information and for updates on health, biosecurity, and disease risks in Western Canada, farmers can join the Smallholder Network of the Western Canadian Animal Health Network at wecan.ca. Until next time.